Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Michael Murphy is an architect and the executive director of the Boston-based Mass Design Group. Murphy has done work around the world, but a while ago, he read an article about a man named Brian Stevenson, and that launched Murphy on one of the most ambitious American projects he's undertaken so far. You see, Brian Stevenson is founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama, and he wants to create a national memorial to the victims of lynching. Stevenson described why in an interview on CBS.
The smog created by that history of racial inequality continues to compromise our health. And there's no place in this country where you can go and have an honest experience with the history of lynching.
And why? Do you think it's because it's too painful?
I think it's because we have created a narrative of denial. We think if we own up to our mistakes, something bad is going to happen to us. We're going to get punished. And I'm not doing these projects because I want to punish America. I want us to be liberated from the chains that this history has created.
Now, the very way that Brian Stevenson talks about the idea of a lynching memorial, that not having one contributes to the persistent national trauma of racial injustice, well, that spoke deeply to architect Michael Murphy. Just listen to how Murphy himself describes the fundamental purpose of great architecture in a TED Talk earlier this year.
Great architecture can give us hope. Great architecture can heal.
Well, the National Memorial to the Victims of Lynching is set to open in Montgomery, Alabama next year. And Michael Murphy and Mass Design Group designed it. Michael Murphy joins us now. He's in New York today. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much, Meghna.
It's great to have you. And let me just first ask you, what does it mean that when you first met with Brian Stevenson, you ended up forming the kind of relationship where you and Mass Design Group are the designers of this memorial?
Well, I think Brian, like many others, are out there seeking a way for architecture to really inform their mission, to improve their overall outcomes as an organization. And he, like I had found as well, traveling through Rwanda or Germany, had seen the vast number of efforts that countries had gone through to invest in memorials and markers that would reflect on the nation's horrific pasts or past atrocities in order to heal their national psyches. And he thought, you know, we have yet to do this in the United States.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand that you had read about him and then basically just sent him an email out of the blue. I was wondering what it is about this project in particular that you wanted to be, that made you wanted to be a part of it.
We at Mass Design Group are focused on finding ways in which architecture and design can really improve our lives as individuals and also see where we can help communities and individuals heal. We like to use the word heal. Using architecture as a mechanism for social change. We really began this organization as students in Boston at the Graduate School of Design at Harvard and had been introduced to the great healthcare leader Paul Farmer and his work in Rwanda. And he had said, where are architects that can help us do these projects that we're serving communities in great need? Why are there so many brilliant architects in this city doing incredible creative projects, but very few of them are serving the communities that need it the most? And this put us on a journey to really find why that was and also to ask, what more can we do as architects? What else can we as designers be focusing our attention on and investing in projects that would fundamentally have change as its mission?
Yeah. Well, I want to talk with you more in just a minute about this idea of architecture as a healing force. But describe to us what you can about the design of the lynching memorial that you hope would invoke that healing.
Well, memorial design is a challenging and controversial thing these days, and many scholars talk about it, about the best way to think about memorialization. Is it a static or is it a dynamic thing? Is it temporary? Is it something very permanent? And the notion of building a movement of truth and reconciliation in this country and to mark the places where African Americans were lynched throughout America is not a static project. It's a multi-year initiative, and And Brian saw this as an era of truth and reconciliation, which he spoke to us about. And that really informed the design of the memorial. We thought not about just having a statue or a place to visit that would stay the same, but one that would change over time. And that very DNA of having markers that could be removed from the site and placed in other counties throughout the country where these killings occurred allowed us to create a memorial that was active, one that would engage the communities where these atrocities had occurred, would bring people together like a barn raising or like an active participatory process to really build this movement of truth and reconciliation that we seek.
Well, you know, people can see a little glimpse of the memorial design in a TED Talk that you gave earlier this year, but it was just released online yesterday, and we have a link to that at radioboston.org. It is a very, even just seeing it in the sort of digital walkthrough that you presented in your TED Talk, it's quite emotional. And again, we'll have a link to that at radioboston.org. But Michael, I was wondering if we could just take a step back and sort of explore in a little bit more depth and detail this idea of architecture as a healing force, because right there on the Mass Design website, on your group's website, there's this very bold statement that you say that architecture is never neutral. It either heals or hurts. Now, for the places that are deliberately designed to promote some kind of national or even individual healing, I get that. But are you saying that all other architecture, most other architecture damages us in some way?
It's a provocative statement, but I do fully believe it, that architecture is not simply an object. It's not simply a sculpture that we use or inhabit. It shapes our daily lives. We live in buildings 90% of our lives, and it shapes our behavior. We really learned this, especially working in places like Rwanda or Haiti with amazing doctors. And the design of medical facilities is a particularly acute example of where spaces shape behavior. They shape health outcomes. If you look at prisons, there are many, many examples of where the space itself is causing people to suffer. And here are very, very direct examples of where architecture can be violent and injurious and hurt people. So we must ask, how can it be beneficial? How can it foster healing? How can it be proactive? And think about positive behavioral change. Mm. This is a provocative idea in that, you know, some want to believe that architecture is just a luxury, that those who can afford it use it and benefit from it. But if we do see our built world as a place that is shaping our everyday lives in major and micro ways, then we are introducing architecture more as a behavioral science and as well as an art form, something that we can work together with to improve our lives on a daily basis and also calculate and measure how it is doing so.
Yeah, you know, I think I have been in spaces beforehand where I have felt uplifted by the design of the space. There's something about it that definitely, you know, sort of moves you. Exactly. But you're also talking about like literal healing in a certain sense. I mean, some of the work that you were talking about in Rwanda that you've done with the hospitals did exactly that. Could you give us just an example or two of some design elements that you put in your work in Africa that promotes healing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see this notion of healing in different scales. I mean, there's definitely the healing of the body, how one uses a space and how it can affect your physical health. In Rwanda, we were encountered hospitals where the designs of patient rooms had not been thought about. The designs of hallways and waiting areas had not really been thought about. And in a particular hospital that Dr. Farmer introduced me to in South Africa, patients walked into a hallway where other patients were sitting with multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis and airborne disease. And those same patients coughed on each other and cultivated this disease in that space, and many of them were immunosuppressed. And then they left the hospital with an extremely drug-resistant strand of TB. Simple designs for infection control were not thought about, and people died because of it. This is a crisis, right? This is where it's not only space, but it is certainly an element of the total package of what's causing this disease to be incubated and transferred and then to actually kill people. The director of the hospital said people died because this space was not designed correctly. Mm. And so you have examples of that there, and we want to ask, well, what are the examples we can design that would not only resist those potential disease transfers, but help to foster healthy living?
Well, you know, you've taken this idea of architecture as a potential healing force and turned it into almost an entire philosophy, right, of the built world. In your TED Talk, you presented it as the low-fab philosophy. Explain what low-fab is to us.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. Low-fab stands for locally fabricated. And I was conflicted when I was forced to work in Port-au-Prince, Haiti after the earthquake with an amazing organization called Jeskio by the amazing doctor, Dr. Bill Pop. And he had asked us to help design a tuberculosis hospital that had fallen down in the earthquake and rebuild it with the same research that we had done in Rwanda. And so many architects came out to support the work in Haiti. There was a real sense that we had to do something about it. Many famous architects went to Haiti to work. Many studios and different schools said, we're responsible for this. It was the buildings that killed so many people. It fell on people after the earthquake, not the earthquake itself, which killed people, but buildings that fell on people after the earthquake. And so there was some accountability. And yet the solutions were limited. So many solutions were prefabricated. If we flat pack houses and send them over to Haiti and erect them very quickly, this could be a solution for the housing crisis. And one of the things that we had learned working with Dr. Farmer was that it wasn't just the quick construction of buildings, it was the process of building that was so healing, that could foster change. And they taught us in Rwanda so much about the labor quotient of building, that we had to employ as many people locally as possible and leverage local artisans in order to build this thing with our hands.
Right.
And so that really changed the way I thought about the solution. Quick and prefabricated housing solves one problem, the lack of housing, but it doesn't solve the other problem, which is fostering a community health, building, giving people jobs and investing in the local labor that's and local materials that's available there.
Well, Michael, if you just don't mind me jumping in here, because I want to connect what you're talking about back to the project in Montgomery, Alabama, because your low-fab philosophy, as you summarized it in the TED Talk, was, as you were sort of getting to there, about hiring locally, sourcing materials regionally, training artisans and laborers when you can. And then I was very intrigued by the fourth part, which was investing in the dignity of the community that the building is intended to serve. So thinking about the lynching memorial in Montgomery, how is that the fourth part there going to be manifest? Because, you know, this is a memorial that isn't without its own controversies in the very city where it's going to be raised.
Yeah, I mean, there's an amazing article about Brian Stevenson's work and this memorial in The New Yorker by Jeffrey Toobin, which came out recently, and encourage people to look at that. I think this fourth issue, how this project could be locally fabricated, just having those set of questions at the outset forced us to think about the process of building differently. And one thing that came about in our conversations as our organizations designed this together was the thought about collecting soil of these places where people were killed and bringing that soil back in individual jars and showcasing that soil as a remnant of the unmarked places in our country which tell a deeper story that we often don't know. And Brian and his team now have been going on a series of soil collection efforts and bringing community members and leaders and descendants together to bring this soil into these jars and bring it back to their headquarters. And it's an amazingly moving and powerful initiative and very much came out of these conversations about what more could we do? How many hands could we have to make this memorial? How many people could we bring together to build this and change this narrative collectively?
Well, we've just got a couple seconds here left to go, but I am curious. I mean, for a major national monument that addresses, you know, a historical trauma in American life, I can see how the healing philosophy of architecture applies. But can we apply what you've been talking about today to architecture on a smaller scale, on the quotidian scale that most of us encounter?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, architecture is not just the creation of huge heroic buildings. It's the everyday decisions which construct our lives. It's the simple decisions from where you source a material to who builds that building to how that building functions, to where we walk in our city streets, to the equity of our neighborhoods. These are decisions that must be designed. And if we ask the harder questions about what else could we do, we could be making more informed and positive decisions about our built space instead of just letting the private sector build it all.
Well, Michael Murphy is founder and executive director of the Boston-based Mass Design Group. He's the architect of the Equal Justice Initiative's Memorial for the Victims of Lynching that will open next year in Montgomery, Alabama. Michael Murphy, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for today. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.